You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. Welcome to the program, A Good Book. This is part 13 of the book, Late for the Bus, An Adoption Story, Finding My Birth Parents, Jerry and Joanne Buss. I'm your volunteer reader, Lee Close, and I am also the author of the book. This is the true story of finding my birth parents after years of fruitless searching, only to discover that I am the eldest daughter of Dr. Gerald Buss, the multimillionaire, legendary owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, and his wife, Joanne. In the previous broadcast, I learned that I would be recognized with my big brown eyes at any Barker reunion. I found out Joanne was still alive, suffering from Alzheimer's, and also meeting my Aunt Susan and hearing my birth name, Marie, for the first time. Also writing a letter to Jeannie Buss, my sister. And last program ended with my first phone call from a sibling, my youngest sister, Janie Buss, talking about all we had in common. And then I was off to a women's retreat at the Casa Franciscan House in Scottsdale, Arizona, where I was given the name of a woman from the Old Testament, Miriam, to study, pray, and write about, and be ready to discuss at the next morning's presentation. And now we return to the reading. I was the only participant given a name from the Hebrew Bible, Miriam, a prophetess who is best known for protecting her baby brother Moses as he was placed in a basket in the weeds of the Nile River to hide from the Pharaoh. She is often depicted in art, playing a tambourine, leading other women in dance. I knew little about her, but learned that night that the name Miriam translates as bitter or disappointment, and also sea of sorrows, and that Mary and Marie are derivatives of Miriam. I was still floating in the clouds from my earlier conversation with Janie and her words about Joanne. She's your mom, too. When a crazy thought entered my mind. Is it possible my birth mother Joanne knew the story of Miriam, and when she knew she would be giving me up for adoption at birth, gave me the name Marie? That evening at the tiny desk in my room, I was inspired to write a poem to her. Ode to Joanne. Time cannot dissolve the bond of mother and child. 66 years between your first and my last glance. Yet joined together in brief sweet seasons of dreams, we laughed and played and danced. In the days that followed, Janie and I had more phone conversations. We shared stories about our long-term marriages, which, by chance, were nearly identical in length, lasting close to 30 years. We talked about our children and our blood types. We discussed things we had in common, like art and drawing, as well as things we didn't have in common, like her love of horses and my fear of them. I loved hearing her voice, especially when she asked me the best question of all. Were you a tomboy? Totally. Me too. We laughed about it, and I imagine it would have been Janie who would have climbed mulberry trees with me in my youth. During those moments on the phone, we were like two teenagers talking a mile a minute. We talked about our mother, Joanne, and I wondered what my life would have been like if I had been there all along as the eldest sibling. Big family, big gatherings, big holidays. In the space of just 10 years, our mother, Joanne, had given birth to 5 children. That's a lot of kids. Janie and I promised to talk again soon. My adoptive family was very small, but I always wanted to be part of a big family. In college, I read The Birth Order Book by Dr. Kevin Lehman, in which he describes certain behavioral traits based on where a child fit in the family lineup, but I didn't always agree with his premise. Now I knew why. I may have been the baby in my adoptive family, but biologically in the Buss family, I was the eldest. My adoptive sister, Christine, 5 years my senior and from a different birth family, was actually the baby of her biological family. That being said, I did enjoy being the baby of my adoptive family, especially when my dad would call me his little one. But now, after discovering that biologically I was the eldest with four younger siblings, I had to rearrange my thinking entirely. Aunt Susan was always planning the next adventure, and on March 2nd, she took me to a Lakers-Suns game in Phoenix. My Aunt Faye had given me the love of the Los Angeles Lakers as a child, but as a young adult living in Arizona, I had become a Phoenix Suns fan, going to the games with Paul and Scott at the Madhouse on McDowell, officially known as the Arizona Veterans Memorial Coliseum. Besides watching our favorite players, one of our delights was getting the chance to personally meet the mascot, the Suns' OG, original gorilla, Henry Rojas, who would perform unbelievable acrobatic feats with the basketball and hoop during the breaks. Aunt Susan had arranged with my sister, Jeannie, for the tickets to the Lakers-Suns matchup. The seats were just a few rows off the floor in the Suns' current arena, Footprint Center, in downtown Phoenix. During the game, I kept thinking how strange it was that, while I was quietly rooting for the Suns, I was acutely aware that my birth father owned the Lakers. And, of course, how could it be that my Aunt Faye and Aunt Susan were both absolute, diehard, loyal Lakers fans? What are the odds of that? Before the game, Aunt Susan gave me a Lakers jacket to wear. I felt a bit out of place. There were lots of Laker fans there, but the Suns won the game. As we were leaving the arena, I began to trek up the steps to the mezzanine level and turned around to wave for Aunt Susan. A young man standing nearby noticed my Lakers jacket and huffed and puffed and shuffled his feet like a bull ready to go at me. "You shouldn't be wearing that jacket in here. This is the house of the Suns." I smiled sheepishly and told him that I was here with my aunt, who was a diehard Lakers fan. Aunt Susan overheard the young man as she approached and wasted no time in scolding him. "I'll have you know, this is my niece, who is the eldest daughter of Dr. Jerry Buss." The young man immediately recognized the Buss family name and apologized. My face turned red. This was one assertive and confident woman. What a night. Not only were the edges of my life beginning to blur, my Buss family discovery was even affecting my loyalty to the hometown team. Chapter 17. Mother, Mother. If we do not transform our pain, we will most assuredly transmit it, usually to those closest to us. Richard Rohr. On April 4th, 2019, Janie left a message for me that our mother, Joanne, had broken four ribs and was not feeling well. I was worried about the mother I had never met and hoped that I would get the chance to meet her soon. A few days later, on April 10th, a man named Ronnie Weinstein called me on my cell phone. He told me he was calling on behalf of the Buss family and had worked for several years for Dr. Buss, beginning in 1979. He and his son were driving through Sedona from the Grand Canyon, and he wanted to know if I'd like to have dinner that night and pick a place. I could hear my heart beating in my ears. Of course I would. My choice was the Oak Creek Grill at the quaint Mexican-themed village known as Tlaquepaque. When I arrived in the parking lot that early evening and started making my way over to the restaurant, I noticed a man looking at me as he walked in my direction. I spoke first. "Are you looking for someone?" "Oh, no. I know exactly who you are. You are definitely a Buss." That totally blew me away. Another validation, a big one. Even a stranger recognized me as a Buss. Ronnie introduced me to his son, and we walked into this busy, popular restaurant. We're seated, got settled in, and ordered some pub-style food and drinks. Ronnie had a big smile and an easy way about him. He talked about the Grand Canyon, the beauty of Sedona, and the anticipation of this meeting. He was humorous, articulate, joyful, and serious, all wrapped up in one. He was also incredibly honest. This is a complicated family. Any questions? I'm not often speechless, but here I was meeting someone who had known the Buss family for over 40 years, and I can't think of a single specific question to ask him. Yes, I had questions I wanted to discuss, but I was dumbfounded. After all the years of waiting, the speed at which I was being accepted as a Buss was making me dizzy. It didn't matter. Ronnie and his son were easy to be with, and we talked for 4.5 hours, nonstop. Ronnie took a selfie of us and sent it right at that moment to two of my siblings, Jeannie and Johnny. When I went home that night, I couldn't stop thinking about the kindness of this man who went out of his way to help me understand the history of the Buss family and describe each sibling in a personal way. He told me that I could call him anytime and he would answer any questions I had about my family. I was beyond shock and happiness that Ronnie had come to see me in person about my decades-old quest. Before the end of the evening, we spoke again about my mother, Joanne, and her fragile condition. He told me that everyone was aware of the importance of getting me over to Las Vegas to meet her as soon as possible. A few days later, in the late afternoon of April 15, 2019, I received another call from Ronnie who said he was working on all angles to find a way to meet my birth mother. That evening, I wrote in my journal, "Today is a day of mixed emotions. I went to an art studio to do a pastel of my youngest kitty, Ella, only to come home and see on the news that Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris was burning due to a spark from some reconstruction in the spire. So very sad, all during the holiest time in the Catholic Church. This Friday will be Good Friday, which suddenly reminded me of my father's death that same holiday weekend in 1989. The happy news is that Ronnie called, and I told him that all the work he was doing to help me meet my birth mother was a miracle, like the movie It's a Wonderful Life, when George is on the bridge with the angel who is working on his wings. I could not remember the angel's name, but Ronnie blurted it out. "It's Clarence! I love that movie!" That same evening, April 15th, at 5:58 p.m., I received a text from Linda Rambus. "Hi, Lee. My name is Linda Rambus, and I work with Jeannie Buss and the Buss family. I hope to reach you as soon as possible as Joanne Buss, your mom, is not doing well, and I wanted to connect with you about that. This is my cell number. Call at your earliest convenience, please." I called her back, and although she told me I might not know who she was, I certainly knew that last name and put two and two together. "It's an unusual last name." "Sure I do. You're married to Kurt Rambus. I used to watch him play for the Phoenix Suns." We chatted about trip details, and she told me I would have the flight itinerary shortly, and she would see me tomorrow. By 9 p.m., everything was set. Further travel details would be ready once I arrived in Las Vegas. Immediately after hanging up the phone, I decided to drive from Sedona to Phoenix and stay at the Hampton Inn on 44th Street. I packed my suitcase quickly and left about 9:15 p.m., arriving at the hotel about 11 p.m. I had severe leg cramps that evening and did not sleep much. I think I was dehydrated. Easy to do in Arizona. On April 16th, 2019, I boarded my Southwest flight to Las Vegas to meet my birth mother. Let me repeat that. I boarded my flight to Las Vegas to meet my birth mother. Was this really happening? I don't remember a single thing about getting on that plane in Arizona. I just know I got off that same plane in Nevada. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is the program A Good Book, and I'm your volunteer reader, Lee Close. When I landed, I had a text from Linda to let me know they were waiting at baggage carousel number 2. When I arrived at the carousel, I recognized Jeannie immediately. First thought, she was flawless, with beautiful long blonde hair and big brown eyes, and more petite than I had imagined. Linda was there along with an assistant, and Janie's son, my nephew Riley, a gorgeous young man with a disarming smile you never forget. Jeannie greeted me gracefully, stepping forward to give me a hug. I was wearing a tan turtleneck sweater and black pants, but of all the stupid things for me to think about first, this came to mind. Okay, now I'm feeling kind of frumpy. I got over it, and with everyone accounted for, we all got in a big black SUV with the driver and made our way to the hospital. Joanne's room was airy and bright and spacious. She had private nurses around the clock. Two nurses, the four of us, and Joanne's longtime caretaker were gathered around her. As we sat near her bedside, Jeannie lifted my hands up and said, "Your hands look just like Mom's." As an adoptee, sentences like that carry so much weight. Just knowing there is a physical similarity is nothing short of a miracle. Joanne was quiet, and her eyes were often closed at first, but then she gradually became alert and engaged. She smiled a lot and appeared to be in no pain and showed no fear in her eyes. She wouldn't eat or drink and would mostly mutter incoherent sounds. It was hard to see her like this, especially for our first meeting in 65 years. I had no idea if it would be our last, but I couldn't take my eyes off of her. "I'm looking at the woman who gave birth to me, and she is looking at me." We did not overstay our visit. The nurses were preparing to take Joanne in for a procedure. In addition to breaking 4 ribs and being in a rehab hospital, there was also a mass on her lung, possibly fluid or blood that they were going to relieve in a 2-hour procedure. Here was Joanne, my birth mother, one tough cookie who would turn 86 next month. I gave her the white teddy bear I had purchased back in Sedona when I first found out she was still alive and suffering from Alzheimer's. As I gave it to her, she had the sweet look of a child as she held it, touching the soft white fur. Jeannie told me how much she loved stuffed animals. I took a long, slow breath, and my apprehension melted away. Jeannie encouraged me to sit on the bed and hold my mother's hand. Jeannie and Linda were taking pictures and videos for me of this special moment. To be ready for my visit, I had uploaded pictures of me as a baby onto my iPhone. I pointed at the baby picture and said, "Marie," then pointed to my heart and said, "I'm Marie." I repeated this a few times while sitting close to her. I told her I loved her and that she didn't have to worry about me anymore, and that I was fine and living a good and peaceful life. Jeannie and I then sat next to each other in chairs at the end of the bed and were chatting briefly when Jeannie said something that just cracked me up, releasing any tension I may have been feeling. "I just realized I went from being Marcia to Jan," referring to the Brady Bunch television family lineup. Comic relief. I needed that. I had been so nervous. But the miracle of the day happened toward the end of our visit. As clear as a bell, my birth mother Joanne sat up in bed and, without hesitation, pointed at Jeannie and said, "Mother," and then pointed at me and said, "Mother." Jeannie answered her, "Yes, Mom, this is Marie, and we are sisters." Jeannie looked at me and said, "She knows who you are." It was time to go. Even witnessing a miracle lasts only so long. Linda texted me later, thanking me for being able to react to the flight and visit so quickly. She told me that my birth mother was clearly aware of me and who I was, and that my presence made her joyful and enhanced her communication abilities. I texted back, thanking her for her part in setting up that tender visit to my birth mother. I flew home on angel's wings. When I arrived back in Phoenix and started my drive back to Sedona, there was a double rainbow in the sky. I took a picture and texted it to Linda. She wrote back thanking me again for the comfort you brought to your mom and Jeannie. She texted me updates over the next several days, letting me know that Joanne was being released from the hospital. She asked how I was processing everything, and I told her I was happy to have had the chance to meet my birth mother. On May 1st, after meeting my birth mother, Joanne, I wrote to my second cousin, Frank, who had been the first person to take an interest in my search. "Hello, Frank. I see you checked in today. I got to meet Joanne. I am so happy. Although she is declining, she is still strong in spirit, and I'm so grateful I got the chance to tell her I love her and that my life has been fine and she never has to wonder or worry again. My birth name is Marie, and I have filled that in on my private tree instead of UNK, UNK. That feels good. Hope you're having a good week. Would enjoy hearing back when you can." He replied 2 days later, "I am so glad you got to meet Joanne for your sake and maybe for her peace of mind." I kept thinking about the trip and the images that remained in my mind of how my 65 years on this earth without knowing my mother had suddenly passed in a flash. It took several days for me to settle back into my everyday surroundings, and even then, for several mornings, I woke up feeling a combination of happiness and sadness. Chapter 18, Gatherings. Meeting my brother, Johnny. In mid-May 2019, Ronnie set up a three-way call with my brother, Johnny, to make plans for his visit to Sedona. Living in Sedona can be advantageous. People are drawn to this place. I can remember exactly where I was standing in my house when I heard Johnny's voice for the first time. I'm naturally drawn to the speaking voice, and through my volunteer work at Sunsounds Radio, working with digital equipment, I recognized the similarity in the overall pitch and tone between Johnny's voice and his, our, father's voice. I had watched several YouTube segments of Dr. Buss speaking in interviews and to groups, and the comparisons were remarkable. On May 28, 2019, I met my brother Johnny at the Mariposa Grill, a Lisa Dahl restaurant with spectacular views of this unique landscape we call Red Rock Country. My partner Phil and I arrived first and had only waited a few moments when a couple started walking toward the restaurant. I knew instantly this man was Johnny. First thought, he's handsome. My brother is really handsome. As he got closer, I noticed he also had big brown eyes. Family trait. Wow, how much fun is it to be able to say that? I probably hugged him a million times while I kept saying, "You're my brother." His partner Cammy and Phil took pictures of my brother and me against the beautiful backdrop of the Red Rocks. Johnny was good-natured about it all, and I sensed a genuine happiness in his hug, too. We all enjoyed the evening, but when I asked if they were ready for my homemade blueberry pie, we all got up in unison and headed toward the door with a 20-minute drive to our dessert destination. We got comfy in the living room, and when the pie disappeared, the conversation grew deep and wide. Johnny couldn't get over how much I looked like our mother, Joanne. My voice, my mannerisms, my laugh. Then he made a tender statement that surprised me. "I wish you could have been in our lives growing up. I could have used the guidance." The guidance? Uh-oh. I could not let that comment pass without an honest rebuttal. There was no way I could resist the temptation to tell him a few stories of my rebellious days and how I had always wondered if my parents figured any of it out. Johnny and I were simpatico from that moment on. I loved listening to his gentle voice and finding out that he was the lead singer and guitarist in a country western band. Although my piano sat nearby, I hadn't practiced lately, so there was no way I was going to attempt to play a song for him. I gave him a sheet of my favorite guitar chords for some Bob Dylan songs, and he told me he hadn't played guitar in a long time either. Maybe someday we'll do a duet. It was after midnight when they left, and my mind kept running the same tape until I fell asleep. What would it have been like if I had grown up in the Buss household with four siblings? Johnny and Cammie returned the next morning for breakfast on the patio. The month of May is beautiful in Sedona, and my lavender plants were in full bloom. Johnny walked over to them and remarked how beautiful they were and how sweet the fragrance. We talked some more about our growing up years and all the fun we may have missed. We discovered that we each had a family dog named Laddie. Although Johnny and I grew up in very different worlds, there were common threads we shared. I believe we were both a bit mesmerized at the thought of what was happening. When Johnny pulled out of the driveway that day, I realized I finally had the little brother I had always dreamt of as a child. That concludes today's broadcast. Join us on the next program for the continuation of Late for the Buss, an Adoption Story by Lee Close, author of the book and your volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you so much.